Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Up to this point in our daily episodes, I feel like we've really only touched on the economy in so much as it has related to AI, right? We've talked about the AI bubble and all of the investment and where we might be economically without that. But it goes so much further. There's so much more to the economy than just the fact that AI is propping it up. Why? Why do we require AI to prop it up? Why are things struggling so much? And how can we know how much they are actually struggling? When we're living in a time when Donald Trump's administration has done everything in its power to remove access to data and to just outright lie on the various economic reports that they give. This can make it really hard to know exactly where we sit, what is the economic outlook. Even in times with status quo presidents who give us the most accurate possible numbers, who are transparent, even then, we don't always get a perfect picture. There is a lot of complexity in things that go into economic data. And of course, the economy doesn't revolve around the U.S. market. So while I'm talking here specifically about the economy in the U.S., much of this is true in economies throughout the world. One thing I noticed before doing my research, and even more while doing my research, is that much of the sort of what's going on in the economy is detected through the vibe, right? It's detected through sentiment. How are people feeling? And you'll notice that theme come up as we go through these articles. I have 3 or so that I'm going to be reading from. The first is from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. It's titled A Weakening Economy and a Drastically Cut Economic Support System. Now, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities is a nonpartisan organization. It's a research and policy institute that advances federal and state policies to help build a nation where everyone, regardless of income, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, zip code, immigration status, or disability status, has the resources they need to thrive and share in the nation's prosperity. I think it's interesting that they claim to be nonpartisan, and yet the fact that they want equality across those various demographics that I just described immediately means that they cannot be aligned at least closely with one of the parties. The reason I actually came to their about section to read about who they are was because they seemed quite anti-Trump administration in their description in the article itself. And upon reading that, yes, it's clear why. They want success for everyone equally or at least equitably, and that's not the case under the Trump administration. So I'm going to read just a couple paragraphs from this. Concerns are reportedly growing over the state of the U.S. economy, so it's worth checking in on its health. The answer is mixed, some positives as it now stands, but also enough warning signs over its trajectory. The economy has weakened relative to last year, and 2 major culprits are the Trump administration's haphazard tariff regime and its cruel immigration policy. Making matters worse, if a recession were to occur, millions fewer people will have access to health and economic security programs that are vital in times of hardship due to the deep programmatic cuts enacted in the harmful Republican mega bill this summer. This was posted just November 5th, and so when you think about DOGE and all the cuts that DOGE made, the big beautiful bill and all the cuts that came from that, and then you have the acceptance, which at this time it had not been done, but the acceptance by Democrats of the budget for ending the shutdown, which now also has a huge effect on people's healthcare, and of course will cause severe economic issues for those people who cannot pay the new premiums. It says the economy was in relatively good shape at the end of 2024, basically on par with pre-pandemic years, albeit with elevated inflation, according to the standard macroeconomic indicators. So, I mean, looking at those indicators, I think that's fair to say. I think it is not correct, or it wouldn't be correct to say that 2024 was the same in potential. Inflation was one big part of it, but I think the signs were starting to show. I'm going to jump over to this article from Fortune, and it is titled, Even If You Can't Trust the Data, These 13 Warning Signs Will Tell You the Economy is in Trouble. And it highlights what I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, which is that we're to a point now where we cannot fully trust the Trump administration. And I should say we can't trust them at all, especially in regards to economic data. So this article says this: for decades, statistics that came directly from the U.S. government, especially from agencies like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, have long been the gold standard for measuring the health of the American economy. But this trust has been shaken by recent events. But this trust has been shaken by recent events, including substantial downward revisions to job data, bruising political accusations, and the unceremonious dismissal of Erica McIntarfer, the BLS's top official at the beginning of the month. By the way, this was posted in August, so this is a couple of months old, and there have been further cuts since the one they just referenced. The resulting uncertainty has left many Americans asking, if official government data can't be trusted, how can you know if the economy is struggling? For decades, regular reports from the BLS and other agencies have offered a detailed portrait of economic activity, from employment levels to inflation to productivity. Businesses, investors, and policymakers depend on these numbers to make informed decisions. But collecting this data is an imperfect, daunting task, particularly as large and fast-moving as that of the U.S. It then goes on to talk a little bit about some of the numbers that had been received around this time, weaker job reports, lower GDP, and that then there were revisions that had been made as well. And it says, and the political repercussions, especially President Donald Trump firing of the BLS commissioner and claims of political tampering, have further fueled doubt, criticism, and confusion. So this invites the question, if you cannot trust official numbers, what concrete signs reveal economic trouble? All right, now it lists out basically five different key signs and then a few sub signs within them, totaling 13. And they're saying that these are things that economists typically point to as alternate indicators. So let's read through some of these. Number one, labor market conditions. You'll have more visibly unemployed people, so lines lengthening at job centers, help wanted signs. If you're on LinkedIn, everyone is suddenly asking for help finding jobs, and increasing rates of layoffs reported by major companies. So while this is not hard jobs data, it is observable. Wage stagnation. If you and those around you are not receiving raises, or if companies pull back on hiring bonuses and perks, it often reflects broader malaise. And a surge in part-time or gig work, because in downturns, full-time jobs often give way to part-time or contract gigs, sometimes observable through employer and media reports. Now, gig work, you know, we're talking about as examples, things like working for Uber or Lyft, the food delivery companies, those types of things. So just kind of right off the bat here, I think we can take a look at the labor market conditions. And at least in my own personal anecdotal experience, I have definitely seen not just more visibly unemployed people, but that those people are having a much harder time finding work. Where in the past, if you lost your job, it may be a relatively quick turnaround. You know, between 2020 and 2022, it was an employee's market. You could find a job quickly and you could negotiate a great rate. Now employees are having a harder time, or people are having a harder time finding jobs. Number two, consumer behavior and social signals. Reduced spending. So there will be a noticeable drop in traffic at restaurants, at malls, maybe traveling. Rising defaults, so more for sale and foreclosure signs on things like homes. Same thing with vehicles. There might be an increase in the amount of vehicles that are being repoed. More people missing rent payments, bankruptcies, those types of things. And charity demand. So food banks, shelters, and local charities may report higher demand. Have you been observing these types of things? Maybe in your personal life or for what you've seen online or in the news. I know for me, I've seen much mention of this, especially on places like Reddit. And it's, again, very anecdotal and it's hard to point at that specifically and say for certain what it means. But in this case, they are saying that this is an indicator of potential economic downturns. Okay, number three, business activity. Increased layoff announcements from corporate press releases, layoff tracker websites and industry newsletters, inventory and discounting. Retailers stuck with excess unsold goods, they might start offering steeper discounts or holding clearance sales, and small business closures. More empty storefronts, business liquidations, and community announcements about longstanding establishments shutting their doors. This one's kind of hard because where I'm from, it feels like it's a constant revolving door of small businesses. Many struggle to stay afloat. But I have noticed what I feel to be more and more of those businesses And not all of them small. Some of them are larger chains shutting down for good. Number four, alternative and composite data. So this one says, when government data falters or is mistrusted, private sector and international organizations' indices become invaluable. So there's a few of these, like ADP private payroll data. It says it doesn't always fully align with BLS figures, but private payroll processors like ADP provide independent snapshots of employment trends. Something called the HDI, which is the Human Development Index, and the GPI, which is the Genuine Progress Indicator, are composite measures that integrate health, education, and income measures to provide a broader sense of economic well-being. And the last one is well-being indexes and social metrics, life expectancy, educational attainment, and even poll-based happiness measures. Now, I am not sure about these. I'd have to do a little more research to see what these three are saying. And lastly, and this refers again back to what I mentioned at the beginning of our episode here, is public mood and media reporting. Media and social media can be canaries in the coal mine. When headlines become dominated by stories of job losses, business failures, or personal financial hardship, it usually signals real underlying distress, even if official data has not yet caught up. And this one is sort of the big one for me. I keep hearing over and over again that it's this, you know, this miracle that somehow the stock market is staying so high when the average person feels like everything is in the dumps. When I'm hearing that the little guy is struggling to pay rent, when I'm seeing an increase of people claiming homelessness, social media, Facebook and Reddit and X, I feel like have been filled more and more with people upset about their economic situation, struggling to get by. And once again, I say that it's difficult because could it just be that the algorithm is pushing these things more? Could it be that it's, you know, a topic of conversation and so people are picking up on it and maybe we're just hearing about it more, even if the actual conditions themselves haven't worsened? I don't think that's the case. I think the conditions definitely have worsened. But without actual data, it can be tricky to tell. At least here, this Fortune article is stating that as you see the increase in mentions, you know, a decrease in the mood, that this can very well be an indicator of troubling signs. Now, to finish things off, we've just mentioned two very important points. One is that public mood and, you know, this anecdotal evidence is very important. And the other is that it is seeming like there is sort of contradicting evidence when we look at the stock market and the fact that wealthy people seem to be doing just fine. However, it is poor people or even, you know, middle class and below that are struggling. CNN has an answer for that. There's an economic explanation for why everything feels so tense right now. Reading from this article, which is just a couple of weeks old, it says a collective angst is taking root. Maybe you feel it watching the news, scrolling social media, standing in line at the grocery checkout. Something's off, and maybe it's been that way for a while, but it hasn't always been this tense, right? While there are myriad reasons for our individual anxieties, there are also economic realities underpinning our agita. Some call it a K-shaped economy, in which the wealthy are getting richer and the poor are becoming worse off. None of that is especially new, but what makes this moment different is the utter flimsiness of it all. The sense, amplified by tech outages, a government shutdown, and volatile markets, that we're just one slip away from calamity. If you're standing somewhere on the top rung of the K, the views are nice, but the ground may feel unsteady. That's because the gains at the top are largely predicated on a speculative artificial intelligence stock market boom that even some AI proponents say could quickly fizzle, and potentially take the U.S. economy down with it. Absent those AI investments, some analysts say we'd be in a recession. AI's value is among the biggest known unknowns. President Donald Trump's herky-jerky trade war maneuvering certainly falls into that camp as well. But then there are the unknown unknowns that have some investors on edge, the cockroaches, as Jamie Dimon called them, that have been propped up by the murky world of private and subprime credit markets and which could go bankrupt with shocking speed. When you see one, the J.P. Morgan Chase CEO said, there are probably more. And he was saying this after the back-to-back bankruptcies of a subprime auto lender and auto supplier. They go on to describe it as similar or reminiscent of the Schrödinger's cat experiment, in which two incompatible outcomes can simultaneously be true. The cat is both dead and alive. The economy is both weak and strong. AI is an overhyped bubble, and AI is the future of everything. The Dodgers and the Blue Jays are both winning and losing the World Series. This was, of course, written back during the World Series. These opposing situations will eventually resolve, of course, but in the meantime, all most of us can do is flip a coin and hope for the best. It goes on to describe much of the same things that we read in the previous article about how car loan delinquencies are increasing, you've got inflation, hiring is slowing, unemployment has held steady but is a little bit high, on and on. The article ends by saying this: for investors, Schwetz and Liu, who are Macquarie strategists, basically investment strategists, they recommended that in this Schrodinger's cat moment of uncertainty, either go passive and spread risks widely or focus on longer-term value investments over short-term shiny objects. Quote, both require lowering noise and tuning out news feeds as counterproductive distractions. They say, will there be peace or war? Both. Will AI raise productivity or fall in a collapsing bubble? Both. Keep investment, focus on the future. Now, the reason I read this last part, I'm guessing that this applies to very few of us, is, I don't know about you, I am not part of the 1% spending, you know, a lot of time considering where to put all my investments, because I don't have many investments. But it does sort of infuriate me that the continued resilience and health of our economy, which inevitably also means the ability for us to keep our jobs, to keep food on the table, to be able to pay the rent or the mortgage, for supply chains to continue functioning properly, etc., etc., we're all reliant on the wealthy few continuing to have the confidence to invest their money in the right way. Our well-being should not be reliant on the successful investment of a relatively very few people, especially knowing that those investments are only keeping things afloat when there are so many things below the surface threatening to drag the economy down. And look, I'll end by saying that several months ago, probably, I don't know, 8 months or so ago now, I did an episode in which I posed the question. I asked, where are we at with the economy? Where are we going to end the year? Are we, you know, going to have some massive implosion in which we fall into an obvious recession and everything is extremely dire? Or do we reach that point of a soft landing, which was the language so often used in the last couple of years? And I believe the answer is that neither, right? We continue in this sort of limbo in which we still have to continue to wait and see and hope. Thanks for being here. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.